This is the podcast, Constitutions for Democracy, from the Albert Hirschman Center on Democracy and the Cost Action, Constitution Making and Deliberative Democracy. I'm Chanina Welp, and together with experts on the topic, I will explore the main challenges deliberative constitution making is facing nowadays. In doing so, the present is obviously key, but to understand the past and its legacies is also fundamental. In this first episode, we want to explore three main questions. Does a constitution making need to be deliberative? What does citizens' participation mean? And how does it connect with democracy and legitimacy? These are central questions, because there is a global claim for more participation connected to a general crisis of democracy. However, participation per se could not offer a solution, and in some circumstances could even produce worse results than expected. In order to clarify these complex topics, I have today two experts on democracy, constitutionalism, and citizens' participation. Elena García-Guitián and Paul Blocker will help us to understand past and contemporary challenges faced by constitutions for democracy. Let us start with Elena.
My name is Elena García-Guitián. I'm a professor at the Faculty of Law at the University Autónoma of Madrid, and I've been teaching for many years political theory, but especially I have been teaching theories of democracy and courses on political representation and citizen representation. Since the beginning of my career, I've been very interested on analyzing how democracy works, but also I have participated on participatory experiences first during the decade of the 2000 with some colleagues with the City Council of Madrid, but also introducing the organization of a deliberative forum with my students in my classes also at that time.
As she explained, Elena and her team focus their work on the research, understanding and promotion of political participation by, among many other aspects, rejecting the sharp division between citizenry and mediators. This allows me to go to the first topic I want to talk about. Constitutions are expected to incarnate the will of the people, but citizens' participation was not always understood as we do understand it now. Elena, how would you define participation and how it distinguishes from deliberation, if it does in any way?
This is a main question. What are the differences between deliberation and participation? And, well, it's hard to say because they are very, very mixed now in the political language. But technically, the emphasis on deliberation started in a moment where there were some visions of democracy that equated democracy as just, you know, a kind of a way of organizing the fight between interests in a kind of perceptions of democracy coming from economics and also the theories of rational choice. So the emphasis is that what is important and central for democracy is the fact that decisions doesn't come automatically from any expert knowledge or they are just made as a kind of aggregation of interest, but really the main decisions in democracy are come from the development of a collective political judgment in the public sphere. So the emphasis is on the existence of a public discourse located in the public sphere, what we call public sphere, that allowed us as the citizens in a democracy to really reflect on which are the best solutions, the best options to organize our common life. And thinking in a way of an idea of the common good. It's very important to distinguish what is deliberation in democracy from a systemic perspective And in this sense, we have to insist that democracies are deliberative by nature because they already contain some institutions and dynamics that allow deliberation. Of course, deliberation can be very poor in system or can be more complex, but this is this level. But at the same time, deliberation is required in the different institutions, in the different levels.
For this episode, we also have Paul Blocker. Paul is professor at the University of Bologna in Italy. His research interests include the sociology of constitutional law and of human rights, constitutional change, constitutional and political imaginaries, civic participation, and populism, in particular, but not only in the context of East Central Europe. Paul, is citizen participation a founding myth? How was it, for instance, during the elaboration of the American and the French constitutions?
Well, it's surely true that the whole idea of we the people, as we find it in the preamble of the American Constitution, most famously, that is largely a myth that can never be fully realized. So if you look at the classical revolutions in the United States and France, it's clear that modern constitutionalism relates to participation, or more accurately, popular sovereignty, which is replacing different forms of legitimacy like religion, as in the case of France, or domination by an external force in the case of the US. And so modern constitutionalism needs popular sovereignty, needs participation of some kind as a form of legitimacy, connected at the same time to what you would call constitutionalism proper, so the idea of a constitutionally grounded order. And what I think is extremely important to realize is that already at the end of the 18th century, a clear antinomy or tension was already there with regard to civic participation. That is, many of the debates at the time were largely about would we need direct participation by citizens, bottom-up participation, or wouldn't it be much better to go for a form of representation, a mediated form of participation? And it's striking that this is still with us today, I think.
Literature dedicated to analyzing constitution making has focused on the importance of the constitution making process, and in particular, on the relationship between the optimal design of a constitution making process, in Chanelser's words, and a successful constitution in terms of whether it is durable, supported by citizens, and able to establish the desired framework of coexistence. Even though it cannot be said that there is agreement over the necessary characteristic for such success, authors have highlighted the importance of, first, whether or not the constitution is drafted by a pre-existent institution, commonly a parliament, as it happened in Spain in 1978, or by a constituent assembly created exclusively for the purpose of a constitution making, as is happening currently in Chile. Second, whether members of the body are elected by means of a proportional system that allows for the representation of different social actors, or they are appointed by the executive. Third, whether deliberation and debate within the body is open or not to citizens and publicized. Fourth, whether the constitutional text agreed upon is ratified by citizens in a referendum. Considering the previous poll, are constitutions made with greater participation and openness and legitimized by the votes of citizens expected to endure over time and become a set of rules?
Okay, so it's important to start, I think, first with understanding what participation and openness means in constitution making and processes of constitutional amendment. Participation can take all kinds of different forms. Classically, it would be about a form of representation. So, for instance, citizens selecting representatives, for instance, in a constituent assembly. We might also think about citizens having actual voice in what constitutional norms are going to look like in forms of consultation, inclusion of citizens in deliberation and debates, in actual drafting of constitutions. And in an even more bottom-up version, we see forms of participation where citizens actually propose through citizens' initiative the revision or the change of constitutions. And then we another form we see in terms of participation has to do with ratification. So this is ex post, after a constitution has been drafted, for instance, a general referendum will be held and in which citizens are then allowed to speak out on whether they think a draft is any good or not. So participation can take all kinds of forms, and openness of the process and also with regard to forms of citizen input can take different forms. I mean, openness most of the times relates to forms of transparency of the process, that whether it's clear and open to citizens, whether it's inclusive, whether a drafting process of constitution making, for instance, is made public. Citizens can actually follow what is going on. The Icelandic drafting process of some 10 years ago was exactly, in that sense, very public. And so it's important in with regard to the question to realize that constitutions are considered higher law. They're kind of foundational norms. And so in many ways, they need more legitimacy than ordinary politics. And hence, a constitutional order needs broader consensus throughout society, through between different groups. And so it needs a kind of, let's say, a super majority form of qualification. And in that sense, in my view at least, the participation of citizens is very important, because it allows citizens not only to have a say of what a constitution, how it is supposed to look like, but it, through the participatory process, it allows also to engage actually with the making of the constitution. It engages citizens further, and it might actually allow citizens to develop a form of ownership, let's put it like that, with regard to the constitution. Whether this actually leads to more endurable constitutions is a difficult matter. We don't have any conclusive, extensive, empirical evidence that this is the case. Also because many of the participatory processes are actually fairly recent. And so we would need to systematically analyze these processes to give a final answer. But in general, I think the more democratic societal legitimacy a constitution-making process creates, the better for a longer-term acceptance of constitutional norms.
It opens room to think on the contemporary demand of more participatory constitution-making, but also in the suggestions that the ideal context for a constitution-making process is that of a tabula rasa, in which the various actors involved have no idea about the positions they will occupy in the future. Elena, what do you think about the role of ideologies, interests, and participation in a constitution-making process?
This is something that is controversial from my point of view, and more when we speak about the constitution, but also there are different ways of understanding constitutions, in the sense that for some, constitution has to be like the perfect model. A constitution has to express the values we have and create the best institution, etc. But other constitutionalists, another way of envisioning constitution is that constitution has different ends, and one of them is to try to solve the cleavages, the differences that we encounter in a political community, and in a way try to find a consensus how to lead with them, not to avoid them. So the ideological positions are very important and should be reflected also on how we take the decisions on the constitution. We can distinguish was the main idea for the past, and is the idea that ideological position represented by political parties was the best way to express political pluralism in a society and to try from that, the differences, from these differences, to try to reach some consensus about the basic rules of the game and the best way of solving problems and tackling problems and taking decisions. This idea, as I say now, is losing weight because there is also, there's a kind of fashion on the idea that there is no deliberation if you don't have a specific assembly or convention, but composed of these, you know, random elected or elected ordinary citizens or common citizens without an ideological affinity, or just because they are not, they don't belong to any institution or any organization, etc. So we are looking for the ordinary citizens as the best judge of what is commonly, what will be the common good. For many, then, when they speak about deliberative constitutionalism, they are just referring to processes where you have used or you are using or you propose to use this type of direct participation of some or with some ordinary citizens. So that you dismiss the idea of deliberation coming from this systemic perspective when you don't have this specific mechanism on that. If you just make a judgment and analyze the past experiences, we have just started to use this mechanism in constitution making processes. This is something new because it represents a different way of thinking on the best possible way of representing the citizens.
Spain has been considered until recent times a classic case of rapid transition and consolidation of democracy. The death of General Francisco Franco on November 22, 1975, brought his successors into contact with a Europe that no longer found dictatorship acceptable. Pressure from outside, therefore, played a key role in determining internal policy. The last economical crisis brought the process into renewed debate. For some actors, the fundamental deficit is that it was an elite-driven process. Elena, you have a more in-depth view on how participation connects with representation. Could you elaborate on that for the case of Spain?
This transition in the books for many years was like described as an example of a good transition. Although for some authors that were deliberative in approach, as for example John Elster, that was very quoted, and for some other scholars, it was a too elitist deliberation. So there was a liberation, but was too elitist in the sense that the procedure was to decide to have elections. Then this parliament, the parliament coming from this election, decided to create a new constitution. So there were new elections. That was a very, very participatory mechanism. In this sense, because the citizens decided who wanted to be there on the creation of the new constitution. But of course, the mediators were the political parties. And then after that, after it was approved with a wide majority required, also there was a referendum. So that you have the participation through the elections to the ones that were starting the constitution making process. And also the participation to make the final approval of the constitution. That was very important also because the referendum often is included as a kind of direct participatory mechanism. And this referendum pretended not just to make effective the idea that, you know, citizens participate on the constitution and that they participate on the law making of the basic laws that are going to regulate their lives, but also this referendum had an educative effect. This is very important because this participatory mechanism always are looking also a kind of a pedagogic effect on citizenship, educating them to participate, to be conscious of how the political process work, and also to give them competencies to really defend their interests and to be able to participate more widely on the political process. So in the Spanish case, the context was really, really complex. The new parties, because of course we were coming from a dictatorship that was really long, 40 years of dictatorship, the parties were thought really very representative of the citizens, because they defended very, very all the spectrum, the ideological spectrum, from the Communist Party that was allowed it to participate just before the elections, to the Franquist party. So they really, the idea was that all these parties were very representative of the different visions of our society in a situation that was really, really ideologically polarized. So in this context, at that moment, the idea was that there was a very, very strong deliberation between the different the parties in government that helped them to reach a consensus. And we spoke about the consensus. This is very important. What happened? Using today's categories and point of view, what is missed there, or they consider, is that the ones that really elaborate the text were belong now what we consider an elite. But the way we approach to the elite at that times is really different from the way we are now in this context on a populist zeitgeist, no? In a populist time, to the vision of the elite. So for some, there was very deliberative, but to elitist, this deliberation.
So it is not just the question of including the people. Paul, what is for you the fundamental challenge of constitution making in the 21st century?
Well, I'm not convinced that a mere process that is more inclusionary, more participatory, will do the trick of reviving democracy in current times. But I do think that citizen participation is an important dimension, an important part of the puzzle of how to deal with what many people see as a crisis of liberal democracy. So in my view, linking constitutional systems, orders, norms with ordinary people is extremely important. In my view, it entails a form of translation of what is often seen as complex, technocratic, expert type of language and norms into something that ordinary people can relate to, that they can understand. And so how you actually do that is, of course, a much more complex matter. But in current times of great challenges to liberal representative democracy, to constitutional democracy, it's essential, I feel, to reinvent democratic politics. And one way of doing that is indeed to try to, in a more meaningful way, to include citizens beyond one-off occasions every once in a while of voting, of selecting representatives, to actually to develop indeed some more direct forms of input, of inclusion into a process of creating those norms that actually are supposed to hold society together. So I believe that's a huge challenge.
And Elena, what is for you the best way of producing a democratic constitution making?
I will say, I don't think there is the best mechanism for every context. I really believe that constitutions are also made to solve very specific problems. So you have to take in account which is the context.
We arrive at the end now, and we can say after this conversation with Elena Garcia Guitian and Paul Blocker that yes, a constitution making needs to be deliberative and participatory. However, the definition of what deliberative and participatory means has changed a long time, and it is connected with the quality of representation, the specific context, and the expectations of the different actors. Participation in this sense can take many different shapes, from a deliberative mini-public to an informal discussion and or a referendum. And all of these can be combined. Rules, transparency, civic education also play an important role. And context matters. I'm Janina Well, Research Fellow at the Albert Hirschman Center on Democracy, and along with other experts from the Coast Action, Constitution Making and Deliberative Democracy, through this series, we will explore past and new waves of constitution making around the world, with a particular interest on the processes, outcomes, and conditions of citizens' deliberation. Join us in the next episode on participatory authoritarianism, and subscribe to our podcast on any podcatcher of your choice by searching Constitutions for Democracy. Thank you.